This is literally kata at this point. Okay. Kata is, it's not real. I mean, it's like.
What's the most efficient path to victory against this particular opponent?
He's dropping off the choke here. We could see the finish. It's looking tight. Tyler Delpre.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Everyday Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Kwan. The Everyday Jiu-Jitsu Podcast is everything you need to know about Jiu-Jitsu. This week, we're going to talk about promotions in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. We're going to talk about if they're important as a coach, how to identify when the next promotion is available, what is the criteria for promotions, and just everything about belt promotions in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Before we talk about that, let's please ask you to like, share, subscribe, comment wherever you can on this podcast. If you can give me a review, hopefully a good one, please feel free to do that. If you want to support the show, there are links in the bottom. And guys, just remember, I'm not reading ads. That is because I feel that it affects the integrity of the show, although I'm not opposed to it if the right offer should come by. But if you want to see the show continue, please support the show in the links in the bottom. Every little bit helps. And I appreciate you guys very much. Okay, so promotions in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There's many different ways to look at promotions in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. First of all, what is the purpose of promotions? I think that the base reason why there is promotions in Jiu-Jitsu is just to identify skill levels. And in that way, you can see where people should be when they sign up for competitions. It kind of sets a hierarchy in the room where there's different levels of participant. You know, the students have been training for different amounts of time, and now we can identify kind of seniority in the room. So I think the main reason is just to identify skill, but another reason for promotion would be to motivate the student. And I've always spoken about how I think that somebody's motivation in jiu-jitsu should never come from a place of belt promotions. It should always come from just trying to be the best version of themselves that they can be. I know it sounds cliche, but I believe that this is true. If you're promoted by, you know, the next belt, I don't necessarily think that it's a bad thing to have that as a motivation, but if it's everything to you, if getting to the black belt is your quote end goal, I really think we're kind of missing the point here, because when you become a black belt, you just become a white belt to black belts, essentially. And the journey of jiu-jitsu is really, you know, the lesson. The result of getting a black belt doesn't mean that your jiu-jitsu journey is complete now or that your training is complete. If you have that mindset, you're probably going to stop growing at some point in your journey. So it really is all about mindset and why are you in the sport? I do know people, I've trained with people who look at it and they say, oh, one day my training will be complete. I'll be a black belt. And it's like, I mean, if you look at it that way, then you're right. Your training and your growing will be complete at that time. You basically just have to put improvement and just constant Kaizen mindset as your destination as it is. There is no end to this journey, truthfully. Another reason why people use promotions in jiu-jitsu, this is more on the business side, is to make money. Let's not beat around the bush or, you know, mince words. Let's call a spade a spade. A lot of people use promotions to make money. I know of gym owners who charge money for stripes. So they'll be like, okay, you're getting a stripe. That's like $40. That's crazy to me. You know, first of all, it's just a piece of hockey tape that holds no real monetary value. But at the same time, that stripe could be important to somebody. And now you're saying, okay, well, if you want it, you got to pay me money. It sets a weird precedent between, I think, the gym owner / business person and the student / customer. These stripes are reminders of where a student is and in their current journey and, you know, essentially their degrees on their rank. And it allows them to understand where they are in comparison to other students of that rank. And we're going to talk about like criteria of promotions in a little bit here, but you know, you could make a lot of money if you want to charge through stripes. I think that's cheesy as hell. I think that as a business person, it's unethical. But it is a way that you can make money. A lot of people will really look at belt promotions and stripe promotions as a way to gain extra revenue and kind of squeeze all the money they can out of their student. I'm going to talk about kids' belt promotions later on in the show. For adult belt promotions, I don't charge anything. I think that comes with your tuition. I don't charge for the belt. I don't charge for any test. I don't do tests for adults. And when I get somebody who I promote to black belt, I usually give them a nice certificate and a sword. It's just a cool tradition. Yes, it is not cheap, but how often does somebody get a black belt, right? It's a pretty special occasion. And so I look at that as kind of a special moment to share with someone, and to give them a commemorative gift, like a sword or something cool like that, I think is very, very cool. But, you know, in terms of like the regular colored belt promotions or stripes, I don't charge a thing for that. I don't look at that as a time that I should be extracting all the money out of a student. Jiu-jitsu is expensive. Let's be honest. It's not a cheap sport to train in. And so I feel that a tuition more than covers the cost that a promotion should be for an adult. I'll talk about kids' belt promotions and testing later on. I have something planned for that. So also keep in mind that when we promote in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that these belt promotions are more for traditional Japanese-based martial arts. So things like boxing, wrestling, kickboxing, there isn't really a promotion system. And, you know, you go into a wrestling room, everyone's, if it's a high level wrestling room or a college wrestling room or whatever, or even high school wrestling rooms, you know, in certain parts of the world, you're going to get really high level people and you don't know what quote rank they are, because there is no emphasis on rank. It's all about just improving, grinding, working as hard as you can, you know, being more explosive, having more heart than your opponent. All of these things are way more valued than the next rank. Whereas things like Taekwondo, Karate, Judo, Aikido, I assume, I don't know shit about Aikido. There is a rank system. So it does seem to trickle down more from traditional martial arts as opposed to Western martial arts. That's something that I think we need to look at and ask ourselves, you know, how important are promotions in the grand scheme of things? So that will bring me to my next section. Are promotions really important? This is going to depend who you ask. I've shared a story on the podcast before about how I basically told my students during a belt promotion ceremony that, hey, we all know that these promotions don't even matter. And I was just sort of, I think sometimes when you haven't been promoted in so long, like myself, you forget, you know, what it's like for that purple belt or that blue belt who's looking forward to that next promotion. You forget for the recreational athletes that this is actually a very special thing. It comes around, you know, once or twice a year, you get a stripe or you get the next belt and they look forward to it. And you forget as a black belt that there are people looking up to you that want to be black belts one day. So to them, promotions do matter. I remember when I was a brown belt, I told my professor at the time, I said, hey, stop giving me stripes. Like, I don't want people in competition to know my rank. I don't care. Whenever you think that I'm ready for black belt, just give me the belt. Let's not put stripes on my belt. And he said, sure. So I've always, from a young part of my journey, I wasn't even really too concerned about belt promotions. It just wasn't something that was concerning to me, but that doesn't mean that it won't be on somebody else's mind, right? And so I made that comment, and then after one of my students messaged me and was like, hey, when you said that, it really sucked the air out of the room, and like everyone's been working really hard, and then you go and say something like that, it was kind of shitty. And I was like, oh man, you're so right. Like, I shouldn't have said that. And so it's easy for me to, to forget how important promotions are to somebody else. So in terms of motivation, it shouldn't be the core foundation of somebody's motivation, in my opinion, but to say that they're not important, I think is not true. It certainly is important. People work hard in jiu-jitsu. A lot of the time they come in, especially through the earlier years, and they get fucked up every class. And when you put that piece of hockey tape on their belt, it really does remind them that, you know, I'm working towards something that the struggling and the hard work and the dedication that I've put in, the hours and the sweat and the injuries, it's going towards something and it's being affirmed by my coach. It's, you know, they're basically, you're telling them, hey, I recognize what you're doing. I see the struggles you're going through and I appreciate you. So that was kind of a learning moment for me when that happened. And I like to share that story with you guys and with other gym owners because you should learn from my mistake, right? I didn't mean to belittle somebody by saying that we know promotions don't matter. But really what I meant to say was, you know, prioritize the learning and enjoy the process rather than just thinking, okay, the next belt, the next stripe, that's what I'm working towards. You know, I want to get my black belt and then my training is complete, so to say. To wrap it up, promotions mean different things to different people. Okay, so what is the criteria of promotions? And this is something that is debatable. I think it's going to depend on the student, really. At the end of the day, if a student is a competitor who has aspirations of competing for world titles and, you know, wants to make being a competitor basically their identity, I'm definitely going to hold somebody like that to a higher standard than somebody who comes in and trains once or twice a week. And it shouldn't be like that, but it just is, because somebody who's completely recreational, you know, a father who has kids and they're in their 40s and they're just starting jiu-jitsu, like their potential in jiu-jitsu is different from a 17-year-old who wants to be world champion, who doesn't have the same amount of responsibilities as the recreational father. So the potential of the young athlete who started younger, who has more time to train, who has more energy to dedicate to jiu-jitsu, their potential is objectively greater than somebody in the older person's position, right? And so I think that this does play a factor. I've never looked at, you know, competition as a reason to promote someone, or you have to compete in order to get the next belt. I would never force anyone to compete. I think competing that's a choice for everyone to make, and it should be their decision alone. It should never be the coach pressuring them to do it. It should be them wanting to test themselves and to see how they do in jiu-jitsu against other people from other gyms of their rank. But I feel that if you do want to be a competitor, okay, now I'm going to hold you to a higher standard because, you know, you're going to be representing us in competition and you're going to have high standards for yourself. So I'm going to give you the best, highest standards that I could possibly give you. There are people, I think, who are not going to reach world black belt level. That's just the truth. Okay. Not everyone gets to reach that level, and it's not for lack of trying. A lot of these people come in and train a lot and they just, for whatever reason, can't get to that level. Maybe they have injuries that hold them back, or maybe they're just old. Maybe they don't have the time to train as consistently as some of the other people. There could be a whole variety of reasons. Maybe they're just not meant to be that good at jiu-jitsu. One of my coaches, I've spoke to him about promotions, and he says, the truth is there's going to be students that I have for 20, 30 years, and they'll never get to black belt. And he says that's okay, because not everyone should be a black belt. It's like getting a degree from, post-secondary education. Not everyone is going to get their master's degree, right? Like if everyone could get it, then everyone would be qualified for the next, you know, for the highest paying job. And he said, basically, not everyone deserves a black belt, and so I'm not going to give everyone a black belt. I've wrestled with this, and for me as a coach, I am somewhere in the middle of the road. I do think that, a meritocracy-based promotion system is ideal, and is probably the most, it has the most integrity in terms of your standards as a coach for promotion. But somebody who comes in and trains under you for 10, 15, 20 years and, you know, contributes to the gym. Maybe they help with kids class. Maybe they're contributing to the community in other ways, tournaments, fundraisers, whatever. Maybe they're helping some of the junior athletes and they can really share a lot of the things that they know with those people and be just a great presence in the gym and an ambassador of your gym and your sport. But they're maybe not world-class black belt level. Does that mean that person should never get a black belt? I don't think so. I think that person, You know, when you put in the time and you clearly are trying to improve, and you as a coach have decided that this person has reached their maximum potential or the potential that they can reach to earn the black belt, I believe it's okay to award things like a black belt to somebody like this. I am not so strict in that, okay, well, if this person can't demonstrate, you know, if they can't perform against world-class black belts and do okay, they don't deserve a black belt. I feel like it is true. Some people will never get to that level. They could train 100 years. They could train 5 days a week and, you know, do all the studying and they still just won't be able to put it together. And that is kind of a reality here. And does that mean that that person shouldn't get ever reach the black belt level? For me, I think that standards are very important. Meritocracy is important, but at the same time, people like that do deserve to be recognized for their contribution to the sport. I think it's a different thing, you know, promoting somebody to black belt who can't escape side control on a blue belt or a purple belt. Like, that's not good. Those are things that need to be discussed, but to say that that person will never be a black belt, those are pretty extreme things to say. And as a coach, it is up to you to work with them and to try to catch them up in those areas. If you feel like, okay, well, you're not up to standard of my standards of what a black belt is, it puts a lot of obligation on the coach to be able to bring that person up and bring them up to speed so that one day they can be a legitimate black belt. A lot of gyms, in fact, most gyms, I'd say any gym that has over 300 students uses a visit-based criteria for promotion. So you come in, you swipe your card or whatever, and into the database it says Matt trained on Monday, Tuesday, Friday, blah, blah, blah. And so this is really good to track for a gym owner. It's a really great way to track visits with all of your students. I actually don't have a system like this. I do have an automated payment system, but it does not track visits. It's probably one of the only downsides to the system that I use is I can't track visits. I'm not saying that I would promote based on visits, but it is good to know when people are coming in. It's if you have those metrics, it does help you kind of decide certain things and see certain trends when people are training, when they're taking time off, etc. So it's a system that can make things a lot easier, especially when you have, you know, over 300 students. How are you going to keep track of everybody? Do these visits automatically mean that this person deserves the next promotion? For me, I've never liked that system, but all of the big box gyms, and like I said, gyms that have over, you know, 300 students likely use this system. I think as a coach, you should be able to watch a student for a certain amount of time. You should be able to roll with them. And like I said, watch them roll with other people in their rank and people above their rank and whatever, and sort of get an idea just by watching and by feeling their game, where they are in terms of promotions. And this is kind of a challenge for everybody who's responsible for promotions. How am I going to know when somebody is ready for that? Again, meritocracy is king. And I think competitions are a great way for somebody to test themselves against other people in their rank, but it's not something that we can expect everyone to do. You know, and you might not even be able to see that person, your student, roll with somebody else from another school who has a completely different, they're under somebody who has a completely different outlook on jiu-jitsu, and see how your student rolls with somebody else from another school of the same rank and size. We don't always get these luxuries as a coach. And so we really have to ask ourselves through objective lenses, you know, is this person ready for the next promotion or not? Do they have the skills required for the next promotion or not? So to be honest, I don't really believe that time on the mats necessarily equates to skill. There is a thing, you know, a lot of people say, like, it's all about the time on the mat. It can be. It depends how time is used on the mat. It depends on how the student is applying themselves. It depends on how they're applying themselves off of the mats. Just because you go to class every day, you know, you could train 5 days a week at a shitty gym, and after 20 years, you still suck. And this is because it really is about the coaching environment. It's about the training environment. It is about your understanding of jiu-jitsu. And if you're just learning shitty things for 20 years, that doesn't mean that time equates to skill. That's why I recommend everybody does studying outside of their own professor's knowledge. I recommend that people study DVDs and go check out what Gordon and Danaher are using. I mean, the sport is changing so fast in the last 5 years. A big part of that is because of the explosion of information, because all these instructionals are now being put out. Now you look at guys like Gordon and Danaher and Craig Jones, and the libraries that they've developed in terms of their instruction are so vast. Now all the information is out there, and it's one of those things where if you don't know that information, you are going to get left behind. I don't care what anyone says. I've felt it for myself. I've seen it in my students. You know, instructionals make a huge difference in your game. You know, when you reach a certain rank, you can definitely watch instructionals and just gain right from them just by watching. This is something that I've felt over and over again. So, you know, it's like that old saying that I've said many times on the show: you can learn jiu-jitsu for 20 years, or you can learn 1 year 20 times. It really is about how your training is structured. How diligent is your coach in learning the best, bringing you the best possible jiu-jitsu, the best? Can they convey it in a way that makes it easy to learn and, you know, develops competent students and coaches? This is all different everywhere. And just because you put in 20 years doesn't mean that you're skilled. And I've seen this over and over again. So, how do coaches know when a student is ready for promotion? So I've heard someone say that the stripes, the degrees on a belt, represent aspects of jiu-jitsu, different aspects. So let's say there's four stripes to a belt, a colored belt. One could represent guard, one could represent top game, one could represent pin escapes, one could represent submission escapes, or you could even perceive it as one could represent takedowns, right? I've never really looked at it that way, but I found it was an interesting take for sure. And I could see how that could be worth something. However, what if somebody is progressing really well in their takedown and their guard game simultaneously? Are you going to give them two stripes at the promotion time? You might. I've done that before. I've given multiple stripes at promotions before. I don't think it's entirely uncommon, but when you get to black belt, stripes are literally just time on the mats. You know, they don't really mean anything. It's just like, I forget how it breaks down. You get your black belt and the first stripe is 3 years. Next stripe is 3 years. Then the next stripe after that is like 5 years or something. Right. So, in the IBJJF, you know, belt promotion system, the black belt literally just gets degrees after time. After time has gone by and you've been a black belt for a certain amount of time. I think it's important as a coach to try and promote from an objective perspective. So what do I mean? This happens all the time when I go and think about, okay, it's promotions coming up. Who should I promote? And I'm watching certain people roll certain people over and over and over again. I'm like, man, this person's beating this person so many times. They must be at this level. But then that person will go into a competition and they will lose to somebody their own rank, or even of somebody who has less stripes on their belt than that person. And so at that point, I have to ask myself, okay, am I getting like a biased perspective here, because I'm seeing my student roll with the same students over and over again, whereas when they go with someone else from a different school who I don't usually see them roll with, you know, they lose. And so we really have to ask ourselves, okay, do they demonstrate the skills that are required at these levels? And I'll go into that right now. I think I've talked about it before on the show, the different expectations that I would have at different ranks. So for the colored belts, generally, from my point of view, the white belt is all about survival. I think the white belt doesn't really need to have a lot of takedowns. I think it's important to know how to do a basic single leg, how to do a basic double leg, right? These things are important. But other than that, I don't really prioritize takedowns for white belts at all. For me, it's more about submission escapes, and hand in hand, what goes with that is the application of basic submissions, you know, upper body submissions plus an ankle lock, I think is really important. And also pin escapes. So pin escapes and distance management are kind of the main things I'm looking for in a white belt. Being able to prevent chest to chest situations from the bottom, being able to recover when their guard has been passed and escape pins. Can they prevent the, can they not get submitted when someone of their own size and rank is behind them trying to strangle them? Can they get back to their guard and can they recover? These are the things I'm looking for at the white belt level. At the blue belt level, I start to look for the athlete to be able to really apply submissions against other blue belts, keeping in mind all of the escaping and the foundation, the defensive foundations that we built in white belt are always going to translate and improve throughout these colored ranks. So I'm not going to mention those, but blue belt being able to apply submissions against other blue belts, being able to, start to look for passing and sweeps. And a really big thing that I'm now trying to implement in my blue belts is the ability to effectively pin somebody and take away their movement. That's a very important thing that was not part of my development as a blue belt. And I really wish that my coaches had put that into me at the time, is the ability to pin and hold someone down. Then at purple belt, it's like, okay, you're kind of halfway through your apprenticeship in jiu-jitsu as it is. And I think that a purple belt should be pretty damn skilled, should have a pretty good understanding of leg locks. I don't wait till brown belt to teach leg locks. I think that's foolish. I teach, leg locks from an early level. Even I have a kids class every Friday. I teach leg locks to kids, and so far no injuries. And you might ask yourself, why would you do that? Because they can't use them in competition, but it's just more knowledge. It's just more understanding of the skill of leg pummeling and ashigarami. So I think that it is quite valuable to teach kids leg locks, even from a young age, even when they can't use them. Knowledge is power. And then they're never going to be uncomfortable in leg entanglement scenarios. But a purple belt should have a good understanding of leg locks. They should be able to get to the back. They should be pretty decent and confident on the feet, in my opinion. So they should develop top game, takedown game, and be pretty damn skilled at that point. They got to understand how to do basic barambolo stuff, crab ride stuff. That's sort of what I look for purple belt. And then when you get to your brown belt, that to me is... Brown belts are like your intern black belt. Like a lot of brown belts are operating at a black belt level at the world stage. If you're a brown belt, you should have a pretty complete game. You should definitely understand how all leg locks work, be comfortable in leg entanglements, be able to extract and avoid leg entanglements. You should be able to, all the defensive stuff we talked about, very important, and basically be a master of jiu-jitsu. And then when you're a black belt, you're basically just a reinforced brown belt. Again, good in all areas. I don't think you have to be a master of anything, but it is good if you have some specialties and you need to be good everywhere. So those are kind of the things that I look for. So when I look at a student and I watch them roll, these are kind of the criteria that I'm basing potential promotions on. If there's a white belt who has, every time they get their flattened out in the half guard and they have no ability to recover from there, they're not ready for their blue belt yet, right? Okay, so I think another thing that you could do when you're wondering, is this student ready for promotion, is ask other people their unbiased opinions. And I'm not just going to ask anyone. For example, I wouldn't ask a white belt, hey, do you think John over there is ready for a promotion? That doesn't make sense. But like if the senior ranks in your gym or your peers, right, other black belts, brown belts, even purple belts, people who are knowledgeable in jiu-jitsu, I think those are good people to ask and just sort of get their opinions and bounce ideas off them. Hey, what do you think about this person getting their next belt? Do you think that that's a good idea? A lot of the time I lean on people that are higher ranked in the gym, and I want to know their opinions when it comes to promoting certain students. I'll always, I think the true test is knowing, how do your students compare to other students from other schools of the same rank and size, right? And we, like I said, we don't always get those chances to see our students roll with other students, unless it's in a competition. And like I said, not everyone does competitions, but that would be a great way to know if your student is ready for the next rank. And then that way you could get some really objective outlook on their skill and where they're at. I want to share a story right now. And this is sort of talking about standards, right? So I'm all about meritocracy. I think that that's really important. Skill is, promotion should primarily be based upon skill. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I had a student who called me one day and he said, hey, I was training here, blah, 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 at this other gym in the morning. And he's been training there for a while, but he's under me, right? He's been training there for years, cross training. I allow it. I recommend it for everyone. I did it when I was in my colored belts. I think cross training is incredibly important for any athlete. But he told me, well, at the end of the class, the instructor, who I know, called, said that, okay, we're going to give some stripes out. And he tried to stripe my student. And my student said, whoa, I'm not, I'm actually under mat. And he's, and the guy basically said, well, too bad. You know, I feel that you're at this level and you can talk to Matt about it. And then he striped him. And then he messaged or he called me and he's like, yeah, I feel really weird about this. I'm sorry I had to come and tell you this. And I just said, you know, it's not a big deal. I'm going to message the guy or whatever. And I basically messaged the guy and I said, hey, just wondering, did you promote so-and-so this morning? And he said, yeah, I did. And I said, and he told you that he was under me, right? And he's like, yeah, well, I didn't know that until I called him up. And I'm like, yeah, but you did. He did tell you and you still promoted him anyways, right? And he's like, yeah, but you know, the with the IBJJF standards, this person should be at this rank. And I want you to know that this person, you know, comes in and tries to smash up our white belts or whatever and smash up other, he's actually a blue belt, tries to smash up other blue belts. And I feel like it would be more fair for everyone if this person was the rank that they should be, quote. And I'm just thinking like, okay, but do you understand that my standards are not the same as IBJJF standards? I don't based upon time elapsed in somebody's journey. I base my standards upon certain skills. And also by promoting my student, you have now denied me the ability to be there with that person for that special moment. Like that's a moment that I would have liked to have been there. I think a better way to go about it would be for you to message me and to say, hey, Matt, I think so-and-so is ready for their next promotion. This person's been training with me for quite a while and I'd like to be there. What do you think? Like that would be a better way to go about it. And unfortunately, disappointingly, the response that I got was that this person basically doubled down and said, yeah, well, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. And this person actually, he actually went so far as to say that this person tries to roll really hard with some of the lower ranks. And I want the lower ranks to know that this person is actually of a higher rank because they're getting discouraged because he is a lower rank. And I believe he's underpromoted. And I said, so, I'm not going to say his name. So you think that my student is rolling too hard with the other students, which he doesn't, by the way, he doesn't roll too hard. He's rolling too hard with the other students. So instead of trying to coach him and trying to tell him to tone things down, you're actually promoting him. And it's such an interesting outlook on promotions. I thought coming from somebody else, a black belt, right. And coming from a gym that I have heard from many people that they notoriously overpromote. Okay. And students notice when they're being overly promoted. I've had a ton of students come to me from other schools saying, yeah, I left because they wanted to promote me too fast. And I know I'm not at that level. When I come here, you know, I roll with other people my rank and I get fucked up regularly. And that's because I don't overpromote at my school generally. And so that was kind of an interesting, disappointing story. But I wasn't rude about it. I wasn't aggressive about it. You know, I could have very well gone to that person and been like, dude, you promoted my student. What the fuck is wrong with you? Like, why would you do that? But I didn't take that, attitude with it because I was more curious as to why he would do something like that. And I wanted to know his reasoning for it. And if he would double down on it, which unfortunately he did. Instead, I just took the route of, it's unfortunate that you did that to that student because now that student has to come to me, his coach, and explain that he had got promoted somewhere else. So you're making it an uncomfortable situation for the student. And it's also annoying for me as the coach because I, like I said, I would have loved to have been there for that moment and see that person get promoted. And yes, they were due for a promotion. They were due for a stripe. So he kind of took that authority away from me and he took that autonomy away from the student in just promoting because he wanted to. It's fascinating, right? And I said, hey, you know what? Next time, just message me and then we can both be in the room for that promotion. But truthfully, if I'm being honest, I feel like this guy just wanted the authority to be able to promote somebody and he wasn't really interested in like sharing that with anyone. So interesting story. And like I said, very unfortunate. Okay, let's talk about promotions quickly from a business standpoint. So again, you can make a lot of money if you want to charge for promotions. This is where we'll start talking about kids belt promotions, right? There's no way around this. If you're a gym owner and you have higher ranked belts in your academy, it looks better. Aesthetically, it looks way better to have multiple black belts, brown belts, purple belts, because it looks like your gym is at a higher level. But merit-based promotions, they will really ensure the standards of promotions at your academy, right? Like they will ensure that those standards are upheld and that your promotions are legitimate. I've gone to academies where you go and you're like, wow, there's like five black belts here. There's tons of brown belts and purple belts. You roll with them, you just kill them. And they're making basic mistakes that a brown or purple belt or black belt shouldn't be making. And this is, it's like the old cliche in jiu-jitsu, the mats don't lie. When you roll with people like this, you can identify, okay, this person is clearly over-promoted. And I find that certain schools will fall into that line where, okay, well, we don't see how good everyone else is. We just think that because we're in our little bubble here and we don't get out and see the other gyms and don't participate in competitions, we see that everyone's getting better in here, but then you actually realize you're biased because you're not, you don't have a test sample from other locations. And then you tend to overpromote within your own gym without seeing your own mistakes because everybody falls into the same system and nobody is presented with problems from outside academies. And other gyms might do systems that come in and completely nullify your system if your jiu-jitsu is not good and it's not current. And this is common, right? So it's easy, I think, for schools that are kind of trapped in a little bubble to promote and have a false sense of false positives, essentially, right? But having a school where there's tons of black belts looks really good on paper. The average person who walks in off the street who's never trained before sees like five black belts. They're like, man, this must be a good place to train, right? And then they never see, oh, actually, these black belts were promoted way too quickly, and there's other places that have different standards, right? So there is no doubt about it that having more high-ranked students makes the gym look better. And if you're an instructor who's promoting because you want a gym to have a certain look or to look higher level than it is, you're going to get exposed eventually, right? Or the students will realize, hey, I'm getting promoted too fast, and then you know, they go to a gym that has more strict standards. And like I said, as a gym owner, I've had many people transplant from other schools and say to me, I left because I was getting promoted too fast and I didn't want the promotion. And if somebody's saying that to you as a gym owner, you need to listen to that feedback. If you don't, basically what's going to happen is those people will leave. Those are the people who truly want to be high level, that truly care about standards. Those are the kind of people that you really want to nourish into your top senior athletes and coaches. And what'll happen is those people generally will leave, and then the more recreational crowd will stick around, and you're going to have a recreational gym, which is not a bad thing. There are gyms like that. But if you, as the gym owner, want a culture of high standards and good jiu-jitsu, it's not the move to make, in my opinion. Okay, we're going to talk about kids' belt promotions now. So for those of you who don't know, I'm just going to quickly touch on the kids' belt promotions in IBJJF, what those belts look like. So for kids, there's four colors after white. So the kids go through the white belt, then there's the gray belt, yellow, orange, green. When a child turns 15? When a child turns 16, a green belt automatically becomes a blue belt, and now they're in the juvenile division. Juvenile is 16 and 17. This is where the IBJJF allows guillotines and footlocks. If you ask me, those moves should already be allowed for kids at the white belt level, but that's just my opinion. A green belt, when they turn 16, 17, automatically becomes a blue belt, and then when they turn 18, now they're competing and they're in the adult pool, right? So understand that for each kid's belt, gray, yellow, orange, green, there is three subsects of belts. So usually the colored belt will be colored belt with a white stripe running through it. Then the next belt is the solid colored belt. And then the third sect is that colored belt with a black stripe running through it. So each colored belt in kids under the IBJJF guidelines has three sections. And each one of those sections, again, has four stripes. So if you do the math, if your child is going to jiu-jitsu regularly, this means that you're going to be getting a stripe basically every month. Okay. And why would we do this? Why does the IBJJF do this? The main response that I can get is that it motivates the kids, right? Oh, we treat kids like kids, right? We need to keep them motivated. And so we need to stripe them every month or else they're going to lose interest. I think that this is really not a good idea. That's why I've never done the three sub belts for each color. I only do colored belts. So if my student is a green belt, now they're a green belt and they're just going to wear that green belt until it's time for them to get their blue or whatever. I don't do green with white stripe, green with black stripe. I think that's too much promoting. And we don't promote adults like this. There's no sub belts for adults. So when you become an adult, all of a sudden what? You're getting promoted maximum two times a year, you know, assuming you're extremely dedicated and consistent with classes. So why would we, shelter these kids, kind of coddle these kids and give them these participation promotions just to keep them motivated? A kid's motivation shouldn't come from them wanting that next stripe, even though this is setting the precedent, setting a habit for them to have this. The kid's motivation should really come from their parent making them go to class. And then eventually, hopefully the kid really just wants to improve. And that's why I tell kids right when they walk in the door, I said, this is not like other martial arts where you're going to get promoted. You're not going to get a lot of promotions in here. Promotions are going to happen maximum twice a year. That's if you show up and work hard. And it's because you need to know that things in life aren't just given to you and promotions don't happen often. There's another school I know, my buddy Christian Simmerling, his gym is Rocky Mountain Jiu-Jitsu in Calgary. He's very good. He's a friend of mine and he has the same outlook. He actually posted this on Instagram a couple of weeks ago about how we're in a society where, participation medals and things, kids get promotions just for being there. And we have to... Is this over promoting? We need to constantly keep feeding them these promotions to motivate them. No, your kid should come because it's a valuable skill and we want to teach them to learn the value of what they're doing, the hard work, the struggling. The reward is the journey, right? The reward is not, oh, I got a stripe today. And then that way, when you do that, that 1 or 2 days a year, when they do get a promotion, it's incredibly special for them. Right. And then in doing it this way, they're not used to promotions. It becomes more about just looking forward to that next skill that they learned or being able to now maintain their guard when before they were just getting their guard passed over and over again. Right. They should be really prioritizing the skills that lead to eventual promotions, not making the promotion the priority, which I believe we're doing under the system. I think one stripe every month is a lot. Another thing is, and this is my downfall as a business owner, is if I was giving each one of my kids a new belt every, so what would that work out to? It would probably work out to a new belt, every, 6 months or something like that. Like we're talking, I could be making quite a bit of money on this. I could say, okay, belt, your next belt is coming up. I'm going to charge you $100 for the next belt. Like, you could totally make that a lucrative business model. Do I think it's ethical? Not really, because a green belt with a white stripe going through it is in the same division in a tournament as a green belt with a black stripe, is the same division as a green belt flat color belt. So if they're going to be lumped together in a tournament anyways, what's the point of this other than just to keep feeding them stripes to get them to come to class? Again, the stripes don't make the kids come to class, the parents do. If your kid doesn't like doing jiu-jitsu, I think that's okay. Just get them into something that gives them discipline and ideally something that can help them defend themselves, right? So that's why I think that's the main reason why I think kids should do jiu-jitsu. And it is up to the parent to show them, hey, we're doing this because there's a value in it, not because you're going to get a stripe next week, right? Personally, I think that is over-promoting. That's why I don't do the sub-belt. And I'm denying myself a lot of money doing that, but I think it's honestly a better way to run a kids program. You got to ask yourself, does that have a positive or a negative effect on the child when you're giving them all those promotions? For me, I think it's a negative effect because the child is now just constantly looking forward to that next stripe. That should never be the motivation in jiu-jitsu. It's not your motivation when you're an adult, and promotions are going to really become slim once you become an adult. So why condition them to this over and over again as a child? Excuse me, just getting over a cold here. All right, let's talk about belt tests. So as I said earlier in the show, I don't really like belt tests for adults. I have been in gyms where they do belt tests for adults. I have mixed feelings about it. I think belt tests can be good. If a belt test is essentially a private with the professor, I think that there can be value in that. However, if the belt test for an adult is mandatory, I think now we're getting into a situation where we're forcing people to pay us money when maybe they don't want to or maybe they can't. And what, are we going to withhold a promotion from an adult because they don't want to pay for a belt test? I think privates should be optional, right? That being said, I do know people that have said, yes, I did a belt test with so-and-so and I found it very, very beneficial. So really the question for me is there value in it? If the belt test can add value to the student, whether it's an adult or a child, I think it can be worth it. I just don't like the idea of an adult doing a mandatory belt test. That's why I don't do belt tests for adults. I do them for kids though, because I want to spend a portion of time with that kid solo where I can sort of assess their game. And I'll give you some examples of my belt tests in a second. I don't think my belt tests are the same as other belt tests. So a lot of people will do, how can we make belt tests more effective? I've seen belt tests from other schools where they're like, okay, you have to learn 24 moves and you get your blue belt. That's crazy to me, okay? Because that doesn't explain any concepts. It doesn't put any of these moves into context or explain when they're going to work and when they're not going to work. This is literally kata at this point, okay? Kata is, it's not real. I mean, it's like, drilling moves and performing moves on non-resisting opponents, that has very little translation towards a live situation. And I've talked about this before on the podcast when we talked about the history of judo and how, you know, the Japanese judo guys were doing kata training and the judoka were doing randori training. And the randori training was just so much more effective when they started to compete against each other. So we can see that kata has very little translation of skill for the athlete when put into a live situation with resistance. So what can we include in a belt test that can make it more effective? I think what's really important is to, instead of just saying, oh, you need to learn these 20 moves to blue belt, or you need to know these 48 moves to get your purple belt. And now they just perform these moves and you're like, okay, instead of doing that, my kids' belt promotions. And again, all of my kids' belt promotions criteria can be found on the online On Guard Online Academy. And they are subject to change as the sport changes, but there's a theoretical portion where I have, 15 or so questions that I ask the student about concepts and things like that. You know, the theory of alignment, what is kazushi, even social questions about like bullying and situations like this, and confidence and ownership, what is dedication, things like this. Can you give me an example of when you took ownership? Okay, so these are some of the theoretical questions. Explain to me what a lever is. Explain to me what a wedge is. Explain to me lever mechanics, fulcrum, etc. These are the things that I include in my theoretical portion of the kids test. Then there's a practical portion. Okay, yes, you do have to perform these moves, but a lot of the time the moves are going to be based around, I'm going to put them into context as to when they're going to work. So I'll say, okay, show me a forward takedown using a forward and backward takedown combination. So a sasai to an osoto, for example, or a turn throw to an inside trip, right? Like now the student is forced to be playing with reactions and kazushi to get to their technique. They're not just performing a technique on a non-resisting opponent. right? And then there's also solo drills they must perform as well. Because I think that it is important for kids that are at like the gray and the yellow belt level to be able to do like inversions, Granby rolls, forward rolls, things like that. I do see value in those solo movements, even though I know the eco guys are probably like, no, that's a complete waste of time. Well, there's value in knowing how to fall safely. There's value in knowing how to go upside down without hurting your neck and recovering your guard and, you know, how to properly bridge, how to properly do hit knee elbow escapes, things like this. But I don't just say, okay, shrimp down the mats. When they perform the shrimp down the mats, I'll be like, okay, now perform that movement against me. So I'm going to pin you in the half guard and I want to see you knee elbow escape. And they try and do it. And of course they make big mistakes. And then I say, okay, so this is why we do this drill. And this is how we can make this drill work in this escape. Right. And then I give them details on how to make a more effective knee elbow escape. So there's a dialogue here and I'm putting it into context and I'm giving concepts along the way. I'm not just saying, okay, you know how to do the tripod sweep. Okay. That's sweep number one, sweep number two. You need to be able to do the balloon sweep. Okay. Sweep number, you know what I mean? So we can look at it different ways and I think we can increase our value and the effectiveness of belt tests. Like I said, belt tests should only be offered if they give value to the students' learning, okay? And I feel like mine have done that, and I have asked parents who have watched these lessons and the kids as well. I said, you know, did you find this valuable? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. A lot of them, it's amazing, some very basic mistakes that they make. Even the higher-level students make basic mistakes when it comes to these very fundamental movements and techniques. Okay, last section here. Should a student ask about an upcoming promotion? There is sort of a there's sort of a cliche in jiu-jitsu where the student should never ask the professor for the next promotion. There's even, you know, you've all heard this one. The student should never ask a black belt to roll if they're a lower rank. This is absolutely fucking ridiculous. This is cult-like behavior. If your gym does this, you should probably go to a different gym. Your instructor is probably not the nicest person. If you know, I love when people come in and ask me to roll. I'm like, okay, great. This is like I have a transparent open door policy at my gym. If a white belt who has one stripe comes up and asks me to roll, I'm like, great. I must be making this person feel very welcome. They must think that I'm an approachable, friendly person. Perfect. This is what I want. Okay. I've heard stories where, you know, the student will go up to the professor and be like, hey, can I roll? And he's like, how dare you ask me to roll? You know, I'm a black belt, blah, blah, blah. This is, if you've ever had this happen to your gym, you should probably go somewhere else. Just saying. I believe that an open door conversation with all of your students, which is difficult as your student membership base increases to like 200-300 students. But I've said this before, being able to carve out even just a little bit of time for the most basic recreational student is so important for your student retention and just for the relationships you're building. Because if you spend 5 minutes to answer a question that one of your white belts have, to you, that's just 5 minutes. But to them, that is you as a coach strengthening your bond and showing them that you care about them. Who knows what that white belt will be? One day that white belt might be a world champion. That white belt might be one of your best, you know, assistant instructors one day, or help work with the kids, or you never know where these relationships are going to go. And that's why I think that investing time in your people is so, so important. Also, when a student comes and says, okay, Matt, like I don't make people call me professor or master or coach or anything. They say, what can I work on to get to the blue belt? This now forces me as the instructor to personalize that person's training and really assess what is needed. So it forces me to now really look at what they're doing and give them honest feedback. It also forces them to apply themselves and try and utilize the advice that I give them. And both of us have to come to a plan of action as to how we're going to make these improvements, right? I can't just say, yeah, don't get pinned chest to chest and you'll get your blue belt. It's like, great advice. Okay, so what are we going to do now to make that goal happen? Well, you're going to need to establish your grips. You're going to need to learn how to maintain distance and create, the basic off balances from this particular guard. And then from there, that now your guard actually can start becoming offensive. It's no longer just reactive and defensive, but now it can become offensive because I've given them a framework and things to look out for to actually improve their guard, right? So I think it's a good thing when students come up and ask you what they can improve upon. Like, that plan of action needs to be discussed. That's why they're asking you what they need. The worst thing is, people who shun students for asking them when they need the next promotion or what they can do to get the next promotion. Because now what you're saying as an instructor, if you shut them down, is don't come talk to me, don't come and ask me questions. And that's again, an environment that is going to stifle growth. And it's also going to make that student feel unwelcome. It's going to make them feel like they can't go to you and suggest things or ask things. And for me, that is not good because it's not Kaizen. I'll just wrap everything up by just saying focusing on the next promotion as the result or the end goal of the journey should be discouraged, basically, I think, in all situations for all students. It should always be about improvement. It should always be about getting to that next level in terms of skill development, being able to solve and fix problems that the student once had. For me, getting to the next level doesn't mean, I got my black belt or I got my brown belt or whatever. It's more about things that used to happen to me in training. Like, I would get my guard passed or I'd get my back taken or I'd get caught chest to chest. I can now perceive objectively that these things aren't happening to me as much anymore because I can see the improvement. I've made changes and I have gotten to a new level now. That is what's really important. And then if you just focus on always getting to that next skill developmental level, the promotions will just organically come. Okay. And again, yes, you need to show up. You need to be consistent. This is a really huge factor when it comes to promotions. You do need to put your time in. Okay. But there are situations where people are just phenoms and they don't train that long and they are able to beat, high level guys. That is absolutely a thing. And when that does happen, I promote those people accordingly too. If somebody came into my gym and they were at, brown belt level by the second year, they would be getting promoted. They probably wouldn't be getting promoted to brown belt because IBJJF will not allow you to promote someone to brown belt. They will not recognize that promotion that fast, but we will be definitely promoting them as fast as we can, especially if they have aspirations of competing against the highest level guys. I didn't really talk about that much about how IBJJF has standards in place so that you can't promote somebody in their third year to black belt. That's why, like, Helena Kravar is a blue belt and everyone's like, oh, she's getting sandbagged. Why does Danaher sandbag her? And the truth is that he has to, because she wants to do IBJJF competitions in both gi and no gi, and he cannot give her a black belt yet, even though she literally beats black belts at the world level. He can't give that to her because IBJJF literally will not recognize that rank. So, if somebody is a phenom like Helena Kravar and they come in, you do have to play within the IBJJF rule set in that way. But that doesn't mean you can't put that person into the advanced division at ADCC and let them go wild, right? So there are going to be platforms for somebody who's that good and who wants to compete. There are going to be platforms for them to compete in, just not going to be IBJJF, unfortunately. But yeah, focusing on next promotion it shouldn't be the end goal. It should always be about improvement. And then with enough consistency and improvement, the promotions come. Anyways, guys, that's the episode for today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you found it not too boring. Again, if you want to support the show, please check out the links in the bottom. You could buy some sweet Everyday Jiu-Jitsu podcast merchandise. Also, my online academy is always there. That would be the best way to support the show. I'll also leave my PayPal at the bottom if you want to leave a donation. If you like the content you hear, I really do hope that you will leave some kind of a donation or support the show in some way. Even if you just share the show or comment or like and subscribe, give me a review wherever you can. That more than helps me as well to grow the show. Guys, I really appreciate you joining me, and I hope you enjoyed the show. All right. Remember, Everyday Jiu-Jitsu Podcast is everything you need to know about jiu-jitsu, guys. Take care.